Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. And I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are, team, our council. Ooh, in aviation, there's a term called the time of useful consciousness. And what it refers to is when the oxygen cuts off, but you're still awake, right? So it's like, ooh, all right. So we know it's dire now, and yet it is May Day, it is Beltane, it is the reuniting of May Day International Workers, WOOF, right, and Beltane, one of the four cross-quarter holidays. They are reunited labor movement and participatory animism rewoven around the maypole. And everything's connected, right? So it turns out that Oliver Cromwell's brother in charge of Ireland sold thousands of pagan Irish women and babies into slavery into the Caribbean, but they took with them the maypole, and that wends its way into Voodoon and Celtic magic and the brewing of Celtic magic and Voodoon. So rewoven around the maypole, we're convening our council of all beings and our alliance with flora, fauna, fungi. Whoa. Yeah. So May Day, International Workers Day, 1884, is Chicago establishing the 8-hour workday. 1886, the general strike, and then the Haymarket Square massacre. But from that emerges as International Workers' Day. Oh, all right. And Beltane, one of the four cross-quarter holidays called the Four Gates of Power. It's Halloween, Candlemas, Beltane, and Lammas. So true Beltane will be May 5th, and we have a lot before then, but it's this whole season of Beltane. So the four cross-quarter holidays were where power was especially eager to be invited in. And in this Taurus realm, it says, however we rearrange the manifest world, the visible manifest world, it changes the invisible atmosphere. So yeah, so anything we put on our altar becomes an invitation for power to come on into the world. And it reminds us, if we don't know what to do, invite in what does. Invite in what does. I always love Noor Hall saying, deliberate celebration of the change of seasons stirs the creative powers of the psyche. They go, ooh. So true Beltane will be May 5th, exact mid-season. And it's where trickster flora, fauna, fungi genius is invited into incarnational sensuality. The glyph for Taurus, the little circle with the horns, we think of it as the bull, but it's not the bull. It's clear from cave paintings and whatnot that it's the womb and the fallopian tombs. Why be born? Why create? Why does creation create? And it answers for reciprocal blessing, for incarnational collaborative kinship. We go, oh. And just something to put in here, in reading about Pope Francis, and he had a years of exile, 1990 to 92, that he didn't talk about much, but he then wrote an essay about it. But it informed him, and he said to all of us, you know, live the dark night, live your exile. And Francis told a politician who'd been voted out of office, you have to live your exile, and you will come back kinder and more merciful, and be prepared to serve your people. So let us see this May Day Beltane season, all of us returning from our customized exile to dance around the maypole together. And the essay about Francis said, the man who emerged was not as authoritarian. He's much more consulting with other people. He's much more willing to listen to other people and to compromise. So they said they noticed a discernible change when he emerges from exile. He's in some ways freer, but also much more chill about living with other people and being in community with other people. Yeah, what everybody says is that he was grumpy. He didn't smile, and he was very dedicated, but also very righteous. He's like, all Jesuits, we must serve the poor, quit reading books, enter the fields, start gardening. You know, he went very Mao, and they were like, we like reading books. You go away for 2 years. And it's said that people didn't want to go to confession to him because he was so grumpy, right? But he worked his exile as Nelson Mandela does, as so many do, and may we as well. He worked it, you know, and so when he emerged, you know, and then also became Pope, he said for some reason in his exile, he read the the 8 volumes of the history of the popes. He's like, I don't know why I read that, but it was my dharma speaking to me. And when he emerges and when he becomes pope, then he smiles, he laughs, he loves dogs, he loves babies, you know, all of that. So the exile realm, I think, is pertinent to us all. And like Francis, you know, we all got to dedicate to being our best selves. Everything comes from that. It's like, you know, what should we do? It's come to this at last, team. We now have to do what we want to do, and we now have to be what we want to be. So there we are, and we're off. So it is Beltane and May Day, and we have a feast of many things before us, all of which are dedicated, again, to invite power into the world, to animate the desirable. So we dedicate to Kilmar Abrejo Garcia, born July 26, same day as KPFK, and all the Kilmars, and liberating and protecting Andre Jose Hernandez Romero, the gentle makeup artist who has not been heard from for 43 days. Oh my. And so we have this splendid song from Solomon Burke. You know, every word, and let's feel every word being dedicated. None of us is free, one of us in chains. Here we go.
Well, you better listen, my sisters and brothers, because if you do, there are voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. And there are people still in darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to try to feel for each other. Let our brothers know that we care. Got to get the message, send it out loud and clear. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. Now I swear, your salvation isn't too hard to find. None of us can find it on our own. We've got to join together in spirit, heart, and mind, so that every soul who's suffering will know that we're not alone. Oh, none of us are free. None of us are free, y'all. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. Cause the world is getting smaller each passing day.
Passing day.
Now it's time to start making changes, and it's time for us all to realize that the truth is shining bright right before our eyes.
Before
none of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us is chained. None of us are free. Oh, none of us are free.
None of us are free. One of us is chained. One of us are free.
None of
None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us is chained. None of us are free.
Whoa, every word, fellow teammates, fellow visionary activists, fellow aspirants to be agents of liberating trickster in the world. Yeah, every word of that song is so profound because we're all in this dream together. So just as he says, and all of the cruelty that we see, you know, many of people have heard, and may there be more, you know, Marissa and her three daughters in Oklahoma City who had just moved into a new house 2 weeks before when agents, but we don't know which ones, they're not, everybody says not us, you know, tore apart every square inch of her house and what few belongings they had, seizing their phones, their laptops, and their life savings in cash as evidence. Marissa said, I told them before they left, I said, you took my phone. We have no money. I just moved here. You know, my husband's coming down in 2 weeks. I have to feed my children. I'm going to need gas money. I need to be able to get around. Like, how do you just leave me like this, like an abandoned dog? And before they left, Marissa said, one of the agents made a comment saying, I know, one of them said, I know it was a little rough this morning. Right, they took the furniture. They took they trashed everything. Okay. It was so denigrating that you do all of this to a family, to women, to your fellow citizens. They're citizens. The warrant was for people who had lived there previously, but they didn't check. You know, so that you do all this to a family, to women, your fellow citizens, and it was a little rough. You literally traumatized me and my daughters for life. We're going to have to go get help or get over this somehow, right? They made them go outside in the rain without being able to get dressed. Her daughter was in underwear. You know, anyway, there's that. There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot we want to put on the table because we got to know everything. We got to see everything. And that sense of we're all in this thing together. We will not let people get cast into the cauldron of oblivion. Whoa. Right. And then we know the woman in Miami, right, who went for her immigration check-in, and she was married to a U.S. citizen. They'd spent $40,000 on in vitro fertilization. They had a beautiful baby daughter who was still breastfeeding a year ago, and they snatched the baby from this woman. And said, we're detaining you, you know, and the husband of the woman said, you know, you could hear her howling all the way to Cuba, you know, it's like, oh, God, you know, that's good. And she's in Cuba, you know, her breasts full of breast milk, right? Come on, team, you know, and it reminded me also, like, because we're all kin here, Beltane, you know, when, you know, odious SeaWorld, with their orcas, which are nothing's meant to be in chains, nothing's meant to be in prison, but they took the mama orca's baby away in a truck, and she was making these sounds all the way as the truck got further and further away, and it's like, oh, the grief and the yearning of mothers. This is Mother's Day, right? This is the time of sensual reverence for life, this time right now, this Beltane, this Taurus season. We go, oh. So we are reminded of the necessity for solidarity. And here's number two, Robert Reich.
Solidarity breeds courage. One of the reasons that so many people in this country are afraid right now. One of the reasons that so many international students are afraid to say what they think. One of the reasons that so many people are afraid that they might be even abducted and sent to a prison in El Salvador is because they feel a lack of solidarity. They feel that they are vulnerable. They feel that they and their liberties can be taken at any time. And they're right if there is no solidarity. If we are not protecting them, if we are not helping them, if we are not looking out for them. So I thank you for your courage. I ask you to help Berkeley and its administration do the right thing. I ask you to help international students understand that we have their backs. Because if anybody is intimidated, if anybody feels they cannot speak or learn or teach or do what they want to do in terms of their intellectual life, none of us is safe. The truth is not safe. And I will say this about the administration's abduction of people without any due process, without any trial, without any judge overseeing it. If somebody can be abducted in the United States and sent to a brutal prison in another land, none of us is safe. The next days and months and years will demand from all of us great courage and solidarity. Be prepared. Thank you.
Yay, thank you. Right. And so we're here in our council, our May Day Beltane Council, to summon all of the encouraging voices. Encourage, wonderful word, that which feeds our heart, that which feeds our heart. So we are agents of cool head, warm heart, opposite of road rage, which is hot head, cold heart, cool head. And just even right now, you know, in the spirit of Obatala and wise leadership and coolness, to imagine our heads as temperature cool, and all that heat moving down to our hearts. So we are agents of cool response entering hot situations. That's a crucial thing. And then all the voices. Sarah McBride on the steps of the Capitol said, if we summon our hope, then we will find the light and turn this moment into what a friend from Florida once called a slingshot moment, where we are pulled backwards, but the tension and pressure of being pulled backwards ultimately propels us to destinations that we have not yet been. We go, yes, we are open to that. And it's also when planets are retrograde, apparently backwards. I like this image for us all in keeping with the slingshot. You know, with one hand, we have a bow and arrow, so we hold the bow in one hand. And with the other hand, we're pulling the bowstring and the arrow of our own desire and our own intention and the desire for community good. We're pulling it back. And I like this metaphor because the bowstring and the arrow go, I don't know if we're making any progress. We seem to be going backwards. And the bow says, no, you'll really like this. Right now, to the degree to which we pull back with our dedication is the degree of forward efficient velocity movement. Futum, futum, futum. So it's terrifying, right? We know that Doge has been given the national parks and more all around that. And we go, oh, so terrifying. So let us become terraists. Let me spell it so that, you know, we're not, helicopters aren't hovering overhead. Terraist. Terra means earth in Latin. T-E-R-R-A-ist. Let us all be terraists in keeping with the participatory animism of this season of Taurus. And I love the sun in Taurus now, you know, headed to exact mid-season. And Taurus is the realm, again, of, you know, animism. I loved a friend or friend, client, colleague who was helping a kind neighbor who'd done rescue work for cats and important things. And she said, we were tweaking her house until it sang. And it's like, oh, that's great. So the micro and the macro, to tend things, to steward things, you know, to tweak our house until it sings. And because we're all, you know, reaching for anything that's ever been useful, let me bring up this useful thing from a book I read 20 more years ago, The Initiate Brother. And it's a syncretized orient. It's about how to maintain tranquility of purpose when in the realm of evil, roiling, collapsing empire. So it's relevant. And there's a really worthy man, and he retreats from the conflict zone into his garden, and everything's off. It just feels off. He doesn't know who to trust. Things are going badly. People are being kidnapped. All that we see around us. And in his garden, everything feels off. You know how that is, right? Just, even the stream in his garden had lost its melodious voice. So he reaches into the stream and he picks up one small stone and he carefully replaces it. And the stream has its melodious voice restored and his mind clears and he sees who to trust, who not to trust, and how to save the world. So for all of us in our magic backpacks, you know, we go, sometimes just move one small stone, just change one small word. You know, messages from outer space are coming in. No, there we go. It's not any stone, right? It's our hands now. We're reanimating all of our skills, all of our participatory skills for intimacy. This is the realm of Taurus, the incarnational realm of Venus. So we reach in and we go, not any stone, and we ask it, Which stone wants to be moved? And it's like, me over here. Yes, it's a partnership. And that's a lot to do right now, which is how we animate the world, right? Just even in small ways and large. Remember in Bali, Dayu Datu is the evil sorceress who through large and small things causes people to lose hope, right? There we go. She can be airplanes collapsing or the stuck drawer going, oh, no, just it's a, so. How do we animate the world? You know, like when we put something on a table and it falls off and we just insist on putting it back in the same place, even though it's going to fall off, we're animating the world oppositionally. And part of we'll honor Pluto stationing, gives us a giant cauldron. Pluto is stationing at 3+ Aquarius, which is restoring a lost condition of spirituality to the world. You know, but things at this powerful time, all the way now, you know, into this next week and into the full moon in Taurus that we'll address, you know, what on behalf of ourselves individually and collectively as a rogue species are we willing to toss into the cauldron? I like our addiction to having an enemy, you know, in all of the vulgar, well, let's use different words, you know, all the sneaky ways that has and how we animate the world. It was a million years ago that Andy Weil and I, you know, used the term benign paranoia. What if the universe is a conspiracy for our benefit? And we go, oh, right. You know, Freud said that paranoia was the beginning of enlightenment because you're beginning to see in patterns. We can maybe throw that into the cauldron too as of temporary use, but into the cauldron. So Pluto now is stationing. A planet stationing means it appears to be standing still at one degree, at the same degree for a long time. In this case, it's 3 degrees of Aquarius. It's the moon Pluto conjunction directly overhead when Pope Francis died, exactly, precisely, restoring a lost condition of spirituality to humanity, to the world. Right. And it really addresses the American demon, which is more the gorge theory of pleasure, right? Which you address throughout, and we address every day of our lives, going, if this is good, more must be. But no, less is more, a common phrase. And then you're really ardent in animating and making that clear. Yeah, and then I have been inspired. I'm going to be a more disciplined microdoser because you say, you know, it is. It is important, and so I'm inspired to do that, and we will lay forth, you know, what becomes available. But I had noticed that day two, and I was thinking of it as kind of cumulative, or this real sense of partnership or kinship, in which it's like, oh, day two, I didn't take a microdose, but I feel enhanced pattern perception, many of the things that you described, and it's like, oh, it's there. So, you know, taking it and not taking it, it's all an interesting partnership, right?
Right. That's the point. Is obviously, Kevin, what you're saying is your body appreciated that you gave it on day one and is still using the changes
yes.
that were coming about. And that's what there's another term for that. It's called healing.
Right. That's super great. And it is healing, you know, you both are quite, you know, forthright in going, this is microdosing, this is not, this is microdose. And I go, oh, I've been a little sloppy. Okay. I'll tighten up here. I do, you know, my words, not yours, but I do find, the psilocybe, and we'll go into all the other things, the LSD and Bacopa and Amanita and all of the things that people are microdosing, including ayahuasca, microdosing as an intriguing thing, and then a sacrament of collaborative kinship. I find it enhances pattern perception, increases our relationship to reality, going, oh, patterns. And that's why both of you talk about, you know, Jim, you talk about it's excellent for writing a first draft. I love that.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of journalists who are very grateful for having interviewed me and then trying it out on the story itself and then letting me know, oh, golly, you're right.
No, I'm inspired. I'm inspired. I'm rededicated, right? Because you talk about many people going, I don't procrastinate anymore. I look forward to writing. It's sort of like Walter Mosley, great black detective writer, said he views writing as sneaking off to have a fantastic exotic affair. I'm like, oh, what a good idea. And so to kind of reframe it as like, oh, because in a sense, what you're both talking about is, it's a re-enthusing. I love the word enthusiasm.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, enthusos means that which makes the divine within us dance, right? And so this enthusiasm, it's like I'm often with self and others, when people go, I've got to, I go, even though it's a little corny, going, let's just change it to get to. And I think the microdosing does that. I've got to. I get to write this essay. I get to do the thing, right? I mean, it's a restoration of enthusiasm for life. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say.
Well,
and this brings us kind of to the... I'll go. It is fair to say, and it brings us sort of to the two great types of distinction and benefits that we point out in the book. So we have healing of physical and mental conditions, and we also have enhanced performance in everything from coding and doing math homework to writing to art to sports, all the way up to sex. So, you know, on the one hand, it's making things that in your life that are not working well work a little bit better, and then other things that you like and that you're interested in, you're actually better able to do them and more easily able to move into a flow space. And as you said, being more enthusiastic and just being able to do more.
Right. I love that. And, you know, years ago, I was part of a Botanical Preservation Corps retreat in the jungles of Mexico near Veracruz with Terrence McKenna and everything. But there were a whole lot of Silicon Valley people there. This was not microdosing, but we'll micro it back to you both. But all the coders, there was somebody who was, you know, early in Microsoft. All the coders had their different formulas for writing code. Now you're saying, you know, in the micro realm, and what you're describing and interviewing many people in this book, I love that, is that it lowers anxiety. I'm raising my hand to volunteer, you know, and cognitive enhancement. And we go, oh, that's great. Right, Jim says writing the first draft is great. And then, you know, so you're The book, I guess, is psilocybe mushroom microdosing, also LSD. Do you ever do those together?
Most people don't, both because they don't have both, and it's kind of like pouring rum in your vodka.
Ooh.
Okay.
which is they're sufficiently similar that there's not much point. They are different a little bit, but mixing them you don't get all the advantages of each one separately when you do them together.
Okay, and then I'll just...
I was going to say that people do, the research shows that there's really not a lot of difference, including at high doses and especially at micro doses. But when you talk to people, they experience LSD as being more of a non-specific amplifier. So you can kind of turn it towards whatever you want to. Well, if you're microdosing mushrooms, they want to teach you and they want to heal you and they want to, have you work on your relationships. But that's just very subjective, but it seems we hear it from a lot of people.
That's a wonderful thing to ponder. LSD, non-specific amplifier. Although, of course, the Eleusinian Mysteries, longest initiatory ritual theater known to humans, people would arrive, they would chant to Dionysus and arrive at Eleusis, and then they would drink an ergot psilocybe brew. Basically, psilocybin LSD was their mix, right?
Well,
I'm not sure
we don't know, but we do know that people... It's a ritual that lasted hundreds and hundreds of years until the Roman Empire and Christianity broke it up. But everyone important in ancient Greece eventually got their opportunity to have that experience.
Right, but it was an ergot psilocybe mixture. I like the scholars who study the Eleusinian Mysteries going guaranteed shared community vision because apparently everyone had it was a 9-night thing. Everybody had a personal insight that was just for them, not to share. And then everybody had a shared vision in which they saw Persephone descending into the underworld, a maiden returning,
right,
an initiated queen. And it turns out,
yep,
the word queen is not snooty. It's one of the first words for a woman in her initiated fullness. Right. So and that's why they go guaranteed shared vision for hundreds of years. Mushrooms is what the academics came to. But but I like that. So you do not recommend microdosing LSD and psilocybe mushroom, even though it's got some antiquity to it, because they're different things.
No, yeah. I make one exception. When you're at Eleusis, I think you should do what's appropriate.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great. Okay. And then, so there's LSD, there's psilocybe, and then you say there's microwaska, and you give a website, microwaska.com, and some... Well, feel free to say more. You say some people are doing the Banastabi copy by itself.
Well,
anyway, feel free to go wild on this, lads.
Let me take a moment on that. Microwaska is the name of a group that originated in Peru, and they are training people throughout South America in the use of microdoses, and they work directly with the shaman for preparing the medications, or the medicines, or whatever we want to call them.
Right.
And what they found in some countries in South America, ayahuasca is not legal, but in all countries, Banisteriopsis, the vine, is legal. And what they went to the shamans and said, well, what do you do with this problem? They said, well, we're going to tell you a big secret. The healing part is the Banisteriopsis capi.
Oh.
And you said, well, what about the DMT-containing plants? They said, well, that's kind of for the excitement and the visuals, and you see the deities. But if you're just interested in the healing, the Banisteriopsis capi does all the work.
Hmm.
That was a revelation to me.
Yeah, completely intriguing. And, you know, I mean, I started off, you know, with teammates, with Stamets and Andy Weil as a little teenager myself, you know, I'm following all this. I've been an Entheo enthusiast from the get-go. But this is a great refinement that I want to say also to our team of listeners and citizens out there. This is a really useful, and it's disciplined wildness is what you both are presenting to us, to go. Some structure, some dedication, some reverence. You know, and I did like what you, yes.
Well, just what you said earlier, that the notion that less is enough, it really goes against the whole way this whole civilization's been going for a long time. And so being able to just have a tiny amount where you're not getting high and when you're not getting off, we haven't mentioned this yet, but you know, one of the big differences is that when you're taking a microdose, it remains at a sub-threshold level. You're not having any psychedelic or hallucinogenic effects, no visuals, no big changes in your what you're experiencing mentally. You're not afraid to have your ordinary day. People don't know you're on anything. And so you might know that you're on a little bit of something, but it's so below threshold. And yet that is exactly the level that the people who are reporting the best results stay at.
Right. Although we're in a shimmery realm, though, you know, when I say that, you know, I experience, or many people experience, enhanced pattern perception, going, oh, and yep. What you're saying about, you know, writing and all, going, oh, I see the connection. That's a very big thing. I mean, it's a big subtle big thing, right?
Right.
Well, that's what a little bit of neuroplasticity does. Yeah.
Oh, right. And then, again, you can go anywhere you want, you know, but you talk about the Aztecs and cacao and psilocybe, right? And cacao is, right, the long history of them being sort of allies, cacao and psilocybe. And somehow in my notes it says encouraging microdosing with cacao as well? Is that, I mean,
yeah.
With the cacao
yeah.
as part of the psilocybe?
Well,
yeah.
Let's go back a little. It's actually something that the Aztecs did. They mixed the two, and then, honestly, they went to parties. And they said they had two uses. One was just to have a good time, and the other was to sit quietly alone and to think.
Mm. Yes.
So I think what we're probably talking about is a difference in doses. But, yes, chocolate, and it's very popular now, microdoses embedded in chocolate, and what we know is it increases the potency, and therefore one has to dose even more carefully.
Ah, right. Well, it's interesting, you know, like what you were saying about, you know, we've kind of hyper-yanged the THC content, and in a similar way with many things. I mean, tobacco was an Aztec and a Mayan god, and it
right.
was for its more contemplative reverie qualities, which then have been bred out into the more addictive qualities too. And so it's like, so do you view your dedication as, you know, restoring contemplation and reverence to our species? Is that
let's say if we only could do that, we would be more than satisfied. The fact
that's
good.
Let's
help people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's enough, right?
Yeah. No, let's put it on our altar of desirable mystery, you know, and do you think, you know, the people that go, oh, I can write code with this and I can be a better Silicon Valley guy, you know, do you think mm-hmm. there's something deeper underneath that might be happening as well, going, maybe I don't want to be a Silicon Valley guy, or does it just make you better at whatever you're doing, even if that could be more deeply considered?
For some people, it lets them recognize clearly things they didn't want to look at.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, I remember a young man said, I only microdose when I have a coding problem. He was pretty clear that he liked what he was doing and he liked being better at it. Other people have changed their lives because they realized that whatever they were doing wasn't nourishing and it was depleting them and making them sick. So one of the things that happens with microdosing is a large number of physical conditions also get improved, and that allows people more freedom to make their lives work.
But right. It's not the case that people are going to take a microdose. And in fact, there's a story in the book of someone taking too much and being in a sales meeting and realizing yes. that they didn't want to be, and they took themselves out because, you know, and so it's not going to give you that kind of epiphany level. I must take huge action to change my life in real time. So that's one of the nice things, is that it's at a slow enough pace that you have time to experience and integrate and really think things through without feeling compelled to take drastic action.
Although it's ambiguous in your book. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. The issue we have is with psychonauts. They say, well, gee, a microdose is going to be a really small, high trip. And it's right. not. It's really different. It's actually just something that gets the body and the mind functioning better and, again, more creatively when that's appropriate, literally physically stronger when that's appropriate, relaxing depression, coming out of depression when that's appropriate. Just think of it as something that accelerates healing at whatever level you need.
Right. and what both of you are expressing, and is in the book too, you know, complexity and nuance and subtlety and quiet and contemplation. Because the anecdote or that you just referenced, it's a little more ambiguous in the book. Somebody takes a slightly higher dose than they'd intended, goes to a sales meeting about a company, and then in the middle of it goes, I don't really like being here. I don't really like sales. I don't really like doing that. It goes home and then goes, so I won't do that again, and as opposed to like, well, maybe you're going to quit anyway, but it just leaves it hanging there. So there's that. You know, the plants, you know, well, microdosing, you even mention, I think, Ibogaine as a microdosing sacrament.
Yeah, it's used by the Bichwi.
Yeah.
We do know from the Bichwi in Africa that they use it in a high dose for their initiation into adulthood, and it's a 3-day massive event. They also use it to improve hunting because it improves your visual acuity and your endurance. And they also use it for better sex.
Well, and it's also it's given, you know, a pretty good representation in Wakanda, in the movie where it's Wakanda, where the protagonist takes clearly Ibogaine. You know, it was a tradition, a ruler would take that. Before they were inaugurated, which comes from the augur.
Yeah.
And then I can't quite imagine that people would, on a high dose of Ibogaine, do anything physical. I mean, I did one super duper, and it's like, whoo, that was, right. Amazing. And that was one where people really couldn't, the person who was a guide said, you know, somebody came in a military uniform and couldn't put it back on. You know, and again, you're talking about little subtle things of just coming more into alignment with inner life and outer structure, like a deep appointment with self. Can we think even of the microdosing as just a checking in with one's own integrity, going, my inner life and my outer life, are they in accord?
If that is where you want to focus, you will get help in the focus. But I want to keep being clear that high doses are transformative because you are really letting go of even your personal identity, of space and time, and a few things like that. That's a whole different realm. The massive changes overnight do not occur with microdosing. Microdosing simply allows you to move in the directions you'd rather move with more skill and more facility and more contemplation than you were able to do before. Students who get B's, they only get A's. They don't become geniuses.
Right. Although there's many examples of people, right, getting good grades, finishing their projects, not procrastinating anymore. It's like, okay. And I love that. And then just as a little side, you know, Jordan, you wrote a book on rebounding called The Bounce. So do you enjoy microdosing and rebounding simultaneously?
Yes, absolutely. Microdosing while you're rebounding and working on your multiple cells. I do that all the time. And also at the gym, I really like to go work out when I'm on a microdose. So, I mean, I personally have experienced that sort of enhanced, performance level that it brings. And again, it's just sort of, Ayelet Waldman's book, A Really Good Day. Often you forget you've even been on a microdose, and then at the end of the day you realize, well, that was a really good day. I was, effective and got along with everybody and things went great. So, I mean, for some people, that right there is a breakthrough to start having good days. And then the other thing that we hear from people a lot is that they feel like they're back, like they're themselves again. And all of this comes from a combination of what we've been talking about as sort of the three main scientific underpinnings of what's going on. You have neuroplasticity, and we can say more about that. You have a pretty powerful anti-inflammatory effect, and you have this general tendency to return to homeostasis or equilibrium. So when people are feeling better, they start making better choices, and they start performing better, and they stop eating so much stuff that's bad for them, and they find that they're sleeping better. So it all kinds of builds on itself, and they have more really good days. But all along that line, there's no major transformative eureka moments of seeing the cosmos.
That's great, because it's also what I found with microdosing is just a sort of subtle thing comes up behind one going, why I'm happy. Just as a subtle thing, and it reminds me of the 96-year-old woman on Groucho Marx a million years ago, and she was just really formidable and great. And Groucho said, "You're 96 and you're so together, you must have the secret of happiness." And she said, "Why, Groucho, I realize there's no such thing as happiness, and you just have to be happy without it." Anyway, so because we could fill that in. I realize there's no such thing as enlightenment.
No, you just have to be beautiful. That's just great. Let's leave it's, that it's, just as it is.
Yeah, it is. It's very wonderful, right? So I think that's part of what I'm going, right, there's no such thing. You just have to be. But it sort of creeps up. You get the point and you understand and you express that too. So, yeah, so anything more? You mentioned you wanted to say more about neuroplasticity. Yes, say more about neuroplasticity, as people are healing that, but also for just to be a full human.
Yeah, so we're pretty sure at this point that microdosing isn't a placebo. And one of the reasons is that the different ways of measuring neuroplasticity, from brain scans to blood flow scans to BDNF markers in the brain, they all look similar with microdosing, but at a much lower and much diminished level. So we've borrowed a metaphor from Andrew Huberman. Andrew Huberman, the science podcaster, says that on a large dose, it's like you've taken a large lever and you get a boulder to get out of its spot, and it starts rolling through the village of your mind and body. And that's neuroplasticity, and you have to be aware it's coming and, direct it away from buildings where people are and farms, so you have to deal with it. Well, with microdosing, you're using a much, much smaller lever, and it's kind of getting this rock moving. But it's happening on day one, and then, as we talked about a little bit, on day two, and then you're mainly fully resetting on day three. But as you microdose over a period of 6 to 8 weeks before you take a couple of weeks off, there's something about the ongoing pattern and the ongoing feeling that this is going on that you're more able to tune into and you're more able to make use of. And one last thing is that one of the last studies we were to include in the book is by a guy named Connor Murray, and they're actually using this term, which is neural complexity. And they found that microdosing definitely increases it, and that sometimes if you do more than microdosing, you don't get that. So we know it's going on, and we know that the brain is more able to neurons and populations of neurons are better able to talk to each other, and new connections are made. And we always use the term rewiring, although it's not a perfect analogy. So we know that there is an ability to create new connections and to let go of connections that aren't serving you. And because it's such a small amount, but it's going on this repetitive level with this very small rock of neuroplasticity moving through the village of your mind, you really have the opportunity to see it and sense it and direct it where you want so that you can get the most value from it.
Right. It's a partner. It's a partnership, and it is so, yeah. Neuroplasticity, equilibrium, The wonderful word deliberate comes from libra and two verbs, librare, to liberate, and libare, to balance. So to be deliberate is to be in a state of liberating balance. I love that. So it enhances deliberation. I mean, these are all things that we really do need. Because I view your book and both of your dedication and this whole realm as really essential to us now. You know, it's like everything's trying to help the humans out to be better Earth citizens, right? And that is part of that dynamic. And then just, you go lemon. lemon teching, pouring lemon juice over powdered psilocybe, soak for 25 minutes, accelerates the psilocybe. Do you want to say more about that?
Yeah, it pre-digests it, so it comes on sooner. And it also, for people who have some kind of stomach concern with mushrooms, and some people do, it takes that away. So it's just a popular way of making it a little easier on the system when you're using mushrooms.
And then just
usually
for the
people are
No, you go.
Go ahead. Well, okay.
No.
Usually people are only doing that when they're doing larger doses, but it also kind of points to some of the differences between LSD and psilocybin. Psilocybin's a little bit trickier to get the right dose, both because the different cultivars or varieties of psilocybin, some of them have 300 or 400% more psilocybin than others, and also psilocybin, people get high to different degrees based on how healthy their intestines and stomach are. So somebody who, you know, takes the same amount will actually experience more if they're healthier. So it can be a little bit trickier balancing psilocybin and figuring out the right dose, which is why we always recommend that people start at the very low end of the recommended dosage range for beginners.
I think I'd just like to kind of mention, because it's a huge use, is people who have what's called treatment-resistant depression, which means the meds that are out there don't work, and that's quite usual. They report that very, very often, within a few rounds of microdosing, the depression simply starts to lift, and they find themselves not only not depressed, meaning not miserable, sad, down, glum, but they also notice that they are more happy. And I think this, that wonderful quote is, happiness is not external. It's an inner state, and you can do it, you know, kind of sitting in your chair or hanging over a cliff or, you know, in the middle of whatever you're doing, happiness can appear. And microdosing simply seems to allow that natural internal function.
It going here, team. We've got four-ish wonderful minutes. Let's make them full and rich. And again, thanks to Stephen and thanks to Priscilla. Wonderful Priscilla. So grateful for Caroline and all of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yes, back at you. Reciprocal blessing. And Jupiter chimes in. Jupiter is quintile Neptune now. All the powerful stories that ever were or will be are available now. And Jupiter says to all of us, what is the one way of relating to the world and everything in it that's guaranteed replenishing and never depleting? Jupiter says, blessing, blessing. You know, and then Rev Ike says, don't say you spent money, because that's exhausted. Say you circulated. We're inviting you to circulate some money. There we go. You can circulate $150 or more, surprise us, you know, for the wonderful book that we're proffering, Microdosing for Health, Healing, and Enhanced Performance, by calling 800-439-5732 or online, kpfa.org. And, remember that, remember something, right? Remember that, remember our dedication. Remember Thor's hammer. Thank you. And Novato, California, again, I'm so grateful to have KPFA during these times, the visionary activist I especially like for hope and creative solutions. Yeah, for 28 and a half years or more, you know, we've been dedicated to anything we need to know to have democracy and critique and solution, but really dedicated also to the liberating trickster within all of us that connects to the liberating trickster out there in the world, in nature. You know, and that's the part of us that comes alive in dangerous times, you know, that is against all odds, is like, okay, we can do this. And we're here to encourage, another wonderful word, to feed the heart, to encourage each other, and reciprocal blessing. May it go well for you and for you. You know, to weave the day together through the blessing. You know, so think also of Fundrise as an opportunity for blessing. And again, any amount that you want to pledge is completely welcome, completely welcome. You know, we need help in this time, and plants, you know, and LSD, you know, in their microdose form are completely unique in that form from the larger doses. And to cultivate complexity and nuance, to hold multiple stories at once. So, you know, we're in our final two-ish minutes here. It would be great to have the board light up, the phones light up, by calling 800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org. So for the book, Microdosing for Health, Healing, and Enhanced Performance, I'm taking it to heart. I mean, I've been an entheo enthusiast, you know, since birth, basically. But this is added, like, oh, right, and to add some structure and discipline for structure and discipline, you know, in our lives, that we all cultivate all of our skills, you know, all the skills that we have to participate, you know, and that's also what we're pledging for, you know, 800-439-5732, and this book, Microdosing for Health, Healing, and Enhanced Performance, so that we can cultivate all of our participatory skills. And astrology and mythology, regardless of whatever we think they are really one of the oldest guides to what it is to be a fully participatory citizen. We have our imaginations, we have our action, we have our ways of collaborating. So, you know, again, everything, who brought what? All we have is us, right? Now, all we have is us. But us is quite a lot. You know, all we have is community. And increasingly appreciating this great station. All right, we're on our way out. 800-439-5732. Thank you, team. We're all in this dream together, wishing each other well. And call on behalf of your animals. A lot of animals listen to this show. Call on behalf of those who can't call. Thank you, team. Thank you, Kirsten Thomas, always. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Thank you, team. Keep calling.